Ruffled Feathers at the Peacock Network.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. NBC Nightly News might be trouncing it gal Katie Couric, but that's not helping the troubled network. The Wall Street Journal is reporting NBC will announce big cuts today, 700 jobs and $750 million, a big chunk of it from the news division. The paper's also reporting that NBC won't run dramas and comedies in the first hour of prime time. They're considered too expensive. NBC Universal's operating profit has fallen 10% in each of the past three quarters, dragging down earnings for the company's parent, GE. Theme park chain Six Flags has just announced a new strategy for boosting attendance rates that dropped 14% last quarter. It's a new code of conduct, but not for employees. It's for customers. Ashley Milntite has more.
The idea is to attract more families to the parks and fewer rowdy teenagers. Starting next year, customers must arrive wearing a shirt and shoes, and that shirt should be free of offensive language or risque graphics. Line jumping and placeholding will also be banned. Theme park consultant Dennis Spiegel says appealing to families rather than teens makes financial sense.
They will stay longer, they will spend more money, and actually produce a more quality experience for the park.
But Robert Niles of ThemeParkInsider.com says there's one problem. Six Flags parks are full of high-thrills roller coasters that don't necessarily appeal to younger children.
So they're running a risk at this point. If they drive away all of the teenagers before they have new family-friendly attractions in place, they could be left with no market at all.
And building kid-friendly rides, he says, will require an investment of many millions of dollars. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The iPod just keeps on raking in the dough for Apple. Apple is reporting quarterly profits up 27%. Corporate spying didn't hamper HP from recapturing its lead as the world's biggest PC maker, while Dell's market share slid. And Nokia rang up increased profits and market share in the third quarter, but not quite as much as analysts had expected. Is it paper or plastic for you at the supermarket? I'm not talking about bags, but how you pay for those groceries. Rachel Dornhelm reports.
A new study finds 54% of consumers use debit cards at the supermarket. Cash comes in next at 20%. Major credit cards and checks follow. Greg Fleming is with Lightspeed Research, which did the survey.
Consumers like debit cards and credit cards because they're more convenient. Banks actually like consumers to use debit cards and credit cards because it's an electronic transaction.
But the trend doesn't check out so well with the grocery industry. A spokesman with the Food Marketing Institute says while the electronic transactions may be a little faster, they do ring up fees. And he says those are absorbed by supermarkets and consumers. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
And on Wall Street, after topping 12,000 briefly, the Dow settled in at 11,992 Wednesday, up 43 points for the day. The Nasdaq declined 8 points to 2337, and the S&P was up 2 points to 1365. This is Marketplace. OPEC's meeting today, and more oil woes could ensue, but when we open the vault of business history... Stacey Vanek Smith says things have been worse.
What led to the creation of the national maximum speed limit and year-round daylight savings time? Here's a hint. Both were put in place to conserve oil. The 55-mile-an-hour cap was meant to stretch the gas tank, and daylight savings time helped schools and businesses cut heating oil use. It all started this week back in 1973. That's when the Arab countries in OPEC shut off the spigot to the U.S. and much of Europe. They were protesting Western support for Israel in the Yom Kippur War. The embargo caused a global recession, and the effects on our oil-thirsty economy were drastic. Gas prices quadrupled, and many filling stations had no fuel, so drivers often waited for hours to gas up. The crisis ultimately led to the creation of the Department of Energy. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
This is American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By Fellows. Millions of businesses worldwide choose Fellow Shredders for their shredding needs. Fellows, for information protection you can depend on. More at Fellows.com. And by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Committed to providing financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive. Thrivent.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Lisa Napoli.
All around America, men and women worry about their jobs.
Iraq, healthcare,
energy and education. What you want?
We continue our series, The Real Agenda, about the economic issues in this year's midterm elections. Six states have minimum wage hikes on the ballot this November, and 23 states have already boosted it. Oregon's rate of $7.50 an hour is one of the highest. Mitchell Hartman reports on how minimum wage earners there are getting by.
Employer groups made two main arguments when they battled a minimum wage hike in Oregon a few years back. One was that workers would be too expensive, and that would discourage job creation. Another was that it would benefit mainly teenagers and part-timers who work low-wage jobs for extra pocket money. Well, Oregon's increased minimum wage hasn't stopped employers from adding lots of minimum wage jobs. And as for who benefits...
The single biggest group are adult women. And more adult women are supporting kids.
That's economist Mary King at Portland State University.
63% of minimum wage workers are full-time workers. These aren't part-time people out to make a little pin money.
Parthena Kincaid fits the demographic to a T. She's 24, raising a four-year-old son, and she pumps gas for Oregon's current minimum wage of $7.50 an hour. Kincaid, who didn't finish high school, drove to Oregon from Amarillo, Texas a few months ago in her beat-up Oldsmobile because of the scenery and the higher wages. In Texas, she'd be making $5.15 an hour. And what can she better afford in Oregon?
Yes, and then I get on food stamps, so that'll help me out a little bit, too.
What about rent?
I just pay it every other week. I pay what I can.
Rent for her small apartment eats up more than two-thirds of Kincaid's $800 a month take-home pay, which is why when I met her, she was picking up sandwich bread and canned goods at a local food bank. She doesn't have a phone, a TV, or health insurance. A world away on a she shopping strip, Erin Middleton brews up lattes and mocha frappuccinos at Starbucks and makes a tad more than minimum wage. She can work part-time and still make ends meet with a little help from family. And Starbucks health benefits make a world of difference.
If I had health problems and didn't have good benefits, my life would be in shambles. But tons of people are in that situation, and I don't know what they do. They struggle.
Economist Mary King says low-wage workers also struggle with services that end up costing them more than the rest of us. For example, when they pay for doctor visits out of pocket or cash checks at high-fee payday loan stores. For her part, Parthena Kincaid says she'll be grateful to make 30 more cents an hour when Oregon's minimum wage is adjusted for inflation in January.
I could go out for dinner and probably take him out to the movie or a zoo or something like that.
And you don't do those things now?
No, don't hardly have the extra money for it.
In Portland, Oregon, I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
You've heard about ethanol, right?